I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
G'day, Irrational Fear. It's Dan Illich here. Last podcast, at the top of the show, I promoted the idea that Mark Humphreys, Evan Williams and I have been working on a secret project for Audible. Well, today's the day. It is released. It is on Audible. It's called Riot Act, and it's about the breaking bad of a conservative broadcaster, or largely it's about how politics and media play at extremes, at the left and right streams of Australian media and politics. And it's very fast, it's very funny, and it's got some incredible people in it, including Tony Martin, Gretel Colleen. There are some wonderful cameos like Rosie Waterland, and Hugh Rimmington, and Sandra Sully, and Ben Fordham, and Hamish McDonald, and all sorts of little voices you will recognise. Another bloke called Rupert Dagar, who is one of the superstars of voiceovers for advertising and radio ads and things like that. He has a myriad of voices. He plays about 1,000 different voices in Riot Act, and he's in it as well. And we're very, very, very fortunate to be able to make it. It's an 8-part show. It's a narrative show. It's the first kind of narrative that Mark Humphreys, Evan and I have written together, and hopefully there'll be more. And so to celebrate, I thought I'd just quickly grab Mark, Evan Williams, who you will know both of them from Mark's work on 7:30. They're the dynamic duo behind Mark's great 7:30 sketches. We also speak with Matt Perrett, who is the lead engineer at Uncanny Valley, who made Riot Act, and also Anjali Rao, who plays Mark's offsider in the show, or rather Campbell Parks's offsider in the show, Michelle. It's a fun, fast chat about our show. It goes for about 30 minutes, and hopefully at the end of it, you enjoy it enough to go to Audible and have a listen. It's called Riot Act, and it's out today, and we're super thrilled. Thanks a lot for listening. There are new Irrational Fears coming down the line, I swear. I'm off to Kuala Lumpur next week for the Amama Foundation Leadership Conference for Asia Pacific. So, and I'll be taking my recording equipment with me, so hopefully I'll bag some big interviews. I just want to shake Michelle's hand. That's all I want. So hang in for that. In the meantime, here is Mark, Evan and I talking about the project we created called Riot Act.
Irrational Fear contains naughty words like Brexit, Canberra b**hole, fair d**kum, and Section 40 f**k. Irrational Fear recommends listening by immature audiences.
Hello, Irrational Fear listeners. You know how I've been basically spamming you with lots of different audio that aren't Irrational Fear shows? Well, here's another one. Yes. But this is a good one. This is about... Oh, they're all good. Let's face it.
Your brand, Dan, is being off-brand.
I'm constantly undercutting myself. That is the voice of TV's Mark Humphreys. Mm. Welcome to the podcast, Mark.
Thank you. Great to be... Am I back? Am I here for the first time? I'm not sure.
Omnipresent. You seem so omnipresent this year. And, of course, your writing partner and friend of the show, Ev Williams.
Thanks for having me.
Evan Williams content is how you want to be known as in 2019, 2020?
Yeah, please, add Evan Williams content.
And we are here today to not talk about irrational fear, but to talk about a project we've been working on for 2 years. It launches today on Audible. It's called Campbell Parks. No, it's not called Campbell Parks. It's called Riot Act.
It took us 2 years to get the name wrong.
The show is called Riot Act. It is out now on Audible. And I thought we'd just have a little chat about it. Now, it's based on a character called Campbell Parks, which you two invented, and you started out on SBS with this kind of parody of Andrew Bolt, was it?
Sort of a combination of people. I mean, I'll defer to Evan on this. Do you remember that first sort of brainstorm session that we had?
Yeah, I think we were actually in the Domain in Sydney. And I don't know, we just sort of said, why don't we do a kind of shock jock sort of character? I think we'd always avoided that sort of conservative character because Stephen Colbert did it so beautifully. But I think Australian shock jocks are just such a different kind of conservative character, just a kind of like more blokey sort of thing that you just don't have over there. So, and it just all came gushing out.
And this is on the feed. So you initially made it as sketches within the feed itself, and it kind of looked like he was on like a cable channel in the high 600s, you would say.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, he sort of just lived within some sort of parallel universe of Australian media, somehow presenting a show that was, you know, 2.5 minutes long. Well, I mean, not that far removed from what we started out on the roast on ABC Two, a 2 minute show. And but Evan would always send me, and he still does, just like screenshots of the podcast, like subject headings of like the Ray Hadley show or the Alan Jones show. I can't think of any specific examples, but can you think of the sorts of things, Evan, that have caught your eye from that?
It's always something to do with the bong bong horse races always comes up, or it's always like a chat with some pensioner or something. It's, yeah, I can't think of the absolute best ones. My favorite most recently was Alan Jones explaining the history behind the theme song of Gloria, and then going into really exact detail about the death of the singer of Gloria.
So Laura Branigan, who sings Gloria. So Gloria is Alan Jones' theme tune, and Laura Branigan, like, it was sort of like, and of course she, I can't do it as good as you, Dan, you know, and of course it was, pulmonary, whatever, he just went into like unnecessary, you know, her dying days, respiratory problems. It was something like, just like, why are we getting all this detail about her death for this, you know, the theme song singer? So things like that, just like, oh, this is kind of unique to Australia.
What fascinates you about those characters? For me, that kind of what you're just articulating is that there is clearly too much airtime for any humans to fill with any kind of meaningful detail on a day-to-day basis. So they've got to fill it with pretty much anything.
Yeah. I think I'm interested in the performance side of things, that it sort of does feel like a performance. It's not a natural state of being to be that angry or worked up. So I think that's always interesting, especially with Hadley and kind of lead, this is less so with Bolt, but like Hadley kind of leaning into the sort of the blokiness crap that we just hate. We just really can't stand that. Using, you know, this bloke, you know, this clown, this joker.
I love it when they call people a mob. And this mob happens to be the regulator for finance in Australia. Like when they're referring to ASIC or something.
Right, exactly.
Oh, this mob.
That's it.
100%. This highly fine-tuned group of lawyers who understand laws inside and out. This is a ragtag mob of idiots.
You could be a scientist, but on that show you're a dropkick or
your lot.
Yeah, exactly. So that just sort of, yeah, certain ways of phrasing things.
It's very exclusive language, isn't it? It puts up boundaries between the audiences.
Yeah, and just you know, just getting worked up about things that don't matter. So that, you know, particularly, it'll be always things to do with like Peppa Pig and that kind of culture wars.
I think a prime example of that is this week was when Hamish McDonald flipped the
bird. Oh, perfect example.
Flipped the bird at someone at the Logies, someone at his desk. It probably, and I was at the Logies, and I reckon
it was the Walkleys.
Not the Logies, the Walkleys. flipped the bird to someone at the Walkleys. That was on his table. And I think it looked like he was flipping the bird to Gavin Morris in a funny way, right, who's the head of news. Sure. but at the same time, why even talk about this? Like, it was off camera. Like, the person didn't think he was being filmed. There was a time, where he just making a joke with some friends at his own table.
I think we've also been interested in those people, like, I won't even say his name, but the ones whose job it seems to be to just watch the ABC and hate it. They sort of, their whole, if the ABC didn't exist, they wouldn't exist. All their columns are just, it must be torture for them to just listen, to consume the ABC all day long, purely for the purposes of then shitting on it.
So, Campbell Parks, give us a taste of what he is like. For you, what is the heart and soul of this character, Campbell Parks? And when you were at the feed creating this character, what was your MO in putting him together?
That's a good question. Evan, does something come to mind for you immediately on that?
Partly we just wanted to capture, just there's an element of all those kinds of people, all those shock jocks. I have a theory that they're basically all the same. Like, they've got the same five topics, the same performance style as well, where it's, one thing I love about it is no matter how worked up, how blokey it gets, whatever, they pay attention. They always say, you know, Hamish McDonald, he should throw himself in a chaff bag out to sea. It's 9 to 5. You know, and it's always that kind of style. And I think it was just trying to tap into what is that? What is that blokey style? What is that? What is that? This dope, this mob, like what is that? And we were just trying to capture that unique style of Australian conservatism.
I remember 10 years ago when I wrote Beacons Hill the Musical, I had this weird conversation with Neil Mitchell. So when that blew up, I wrote a musical called Beacons Hill the Musical. It's about the Beacons Hill mine disaster and the media exploitation of the people in that town. And what would happen, the first phone call I got in 6 o'clock in the morning when it started to blow up was from Matt and Joe from Fox FM. And they were like, whoa, what have you done? Whoa, that's a wacky show. Whoa. Oh, well, good luck with it. Blah, 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 blah. And the next phone call was Neil Mitchell. You're the worst person in the world. Blah, 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 blah. And as I was talking, I was realizing, oh, he's actually not listening to what I'm saying. I feel like he's sorting out papers and trying to figure out what's coming up in the next quarter hour. Because no matter what I would say, he would say, well, what about this? And I'd say, Neil, you just didn't listen to the last three sentences I said. I just answered that three sentences ago. You're not even listening to me. He's like, well, Hitler wouldn't write a musical. That's what he actually did. You wouldn't write a musical about Hitler. And I'm like, well, Mel Brooks already did. Of course you can.
I think I got very excited there for a moment when I thought that maybe Hitler had written a musical. I mean, he was an artist. So you never know.
It wouldn't have been a stretch.
No, I didn't know. He maybe added some lyrics to some Wagner or something. I don't know. But but I think for us also at that time, we were getting our first, maybe we were getting our first taste of outsiders and all that sort of stuff, where it was like really leaning into the, maybe we were slightly before that. I can't recall.
Yeah, kind of like Sky After Dark. Mark Latham started Facebook streaming.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah, he had that. Yeah, so all that sort of fascinated us. And then some of the newer players that were popping up, some younger people that were kind of, again, I just don't even want to say names. You know who they are. So I don't want to dignify these choices. But, so there just seemed so many of them, and yet they were all more or less the same. And it also felt like something that I think you, Dan, probably feel this way as well. It's so predictable that anyone could do it. And if, you know, inevitably when our careers decline, that's a very real option to just go, oh, okay, we're just going to rag on the ABC costing $1 billion a year. We can, you know, have something about climate change and lattes and all the, you know, there's only, like Evan said, there's only like five
talking points.
Exactly. And you can make a very good living off those five talking points. So, yeah, I think that's what sort of fascinated us, is those people have just gone, you know what? yeah, I could make this work.
If you're a failed comedian, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
As I'm looking at options right now.
Well, Rowan Dean is supposedly a satirist. I mean, I don't want to get into the... I hate the whole kind of like so-called comedian, but like, you know, he brands himself as a satirist.
And I do like it. I think it is his Twitter bio. It says Australia's greatest satirist, and that quote was given to him by Andrew Bolt.
Yes, on the cover of his book.
Who I actually think is probably Australia's greatest satirist.
I mean, what makes Andrew Bolt laugh? Like, what does he actually find funny? I don't even... Okay, it's like that sort of thing of like you don't really hear Trump genuinely laugh at something.
Oh, he loved that latest comedy release, that book, Dark Emu.
Yes,
yeah, right, loved, yeah. Dark Emu.
No, there was of course, a
joke on every page.
Very, very.
With that one.
What a world. I mean, that thing as well. I mean, just sort of like the choice. Like, why has he made his brand going? Like, his brand seems to be based around like people identifying as indigenous who are not dark enough for his liking. That's what it seems to be.
It's a very weird choice. It's a very weird choice. You're not white enough for my liking, Mark Humphries.
Oh, I think you'd struggle to find someone whiter. But I can't even remember what the first sketch we did or what it was based out of. But at that time, like 18C was being discussed. That was a thing. I think one of the sketches about Racial Discrimination Act. And then, yeah, Latham kind of, I think, was thrown off Sky News, and that was another topic.
Then around December 2017, I was living in the States and I was unemployed, trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. And then I thought, gee, you know what would be good? We need to create long-form comedy. One character I thought should have its own TV show was Campbell Parks. And I thought, I got to get these boys on the line and talk to them about it. So I called you guys up and I can't remember what we spoke about, but I was just really, I was in a hyper state about trying to create original narratives for ourselves because no one's making it. No one's making interesting stuff in Australia that we kind of were really into in that way. And that's when I thought, Campbell Parks, it's got to be a series. Can you remember that phone call?
My main memory is that you were enthusiastic about the character. We had wanted to do something more with it, but had kind of, I think we were very skeptical at that point. I think we'd had sort of dead-end meetings about things and just sort of gave up hope that things could be made that were longer than 2.5 minutes. And so you were like, oh, I'd like to kind of pitch this around. And I think Evan and I, in all honesty, were just like, good luck. Is that how you remember?
We had actually, we made a pilot. Remember?
Oh, yes.
We did make a pilot with a broadcaster. I won't name it, but it cost $1 billion a year. They got to be doing something about it. But so I think that we didn't have... I still think that the initial pilot we made was the most I've laughed making something, the most excited I've been about something. And so, it broke my heart when it didn't get picked up. But my heart's now back together since, because of Dan's phone call. FaceTime.
And so we basically spent 2 years getting together, writing it. We got paid a very small amount of money from Audible to start writing, and I think we spent all that money in cafes. We ate some of the best cafes. Our writing fee basically on lunches and dinners, trying to generate ideas for this show. And particularly, I think a big shout out to Trio in Bondi.
Yes. Well, actually, we're at Trio. Evan, you should tell this story because this is actually your story. But we were at Trio. And there were two gentlemen sitting next to us who, well, I'll leave, Evan, can you tell the story?
I don't remember the specifics of it, but it's just...
Oh, Mark went to pay.
I went to go and pay for the meal. And then,
because Mark's on television and had TV scratch at that point.
And then, yeah, sure, that brief period. And do you remember what happened?
I can't remember exactly, but I just remember one of these men just came up and he just said... I think it was something like, "Do you think he's funny?" or something. And, I saw a segment. He's actually wrong. He's actually wrong about that.
talking about
the 7:30 stuff.
And unwittingly talking to the writer of the work as well.
Yeah. I think it was a pretty terse exchange. I can't remember exactly what. I feel like I said something funny. That's a story of my life. But anyway. But yeah, that was the first time I've seen someone just come up and just say, No, that wasn't right.
Yeah.
No.
And it was so gutless as well. It was like, I'm not going to say it to the guy that I've got an issue with. I'm going to take it up with his friend who he had coffee with, not realizing that the friend was, yes, the co-writer of the thing that you're complaining about.
So for 2 years, this was the experience. Boomers accosting Mark in cafes as we were writing. And then we kind of started, then we got the green light to go into production, and we worked with a bloke on writing this stuff called David K. Barnes, an editor, a wonderful script editor in London, who really helped us with cracking our narrative. And then we worked with a great comic writer and director, Casey Anning, who then helped us restructure it even further to refine the story even further. And that was a great last couple of 2 weeks before we ran into production. Then our scripts got approved and we started production. And I thought I'd just give Matt Perrott a call now. Matt is the sound engineer at Uncanny Valley who helped put the show together. Let's give him a buzz. Oh, he's standing by. Here we go. He's just on speakerphone. He just had a baby too, so, he's probably...
Yeah, hello.
Oh, we're just talking about you, Matt.
Oh, funny about that.
So, Matt, you're on the podcast with Evan and Mark.
G'day, Matt. How are you, mate?
Hey, guys. How's everyone doing?
Oh, fantastic. You coping all right with Bubba?
Well, coping is a good word.
Yeah. Now, Matt, you were the main engineer on Riot Act and you work at Uncanny Valley. What did you think when I first came in and had a meeting with you about wanting to do an 8-part series with 83 characters that spanned the world of radio politics and intense personalities?
I think straight off the bat, there was a lot of ambition in the project. And I think as we kind of went through definitely more and more in our discussion about what was required to continue on, it was becoming quite obvious that we were going to have some challenges with what we were hoping to achieve, especially in the short amount of time. But everything was super exciting. I mean, sort of once we started going through the scripts and talking about how we want to approach the recording and the overall sort of sound or audio world of the project, it was great. And I think we sort of got to a really, really nice place in the end as well. So it was exciting.
Can you talk us a little bit about the unique way we recorded the show and your approach to recording it in unorthodox sense?
Yeah, I guess if we sort of look back at how you would traditionally approach a project such as this, you probably do a roundtable recording that, you try and get as much of the cast in as possible. Sit down at a desk in a large room and you fit off your lines and you get through it all and you got everything nice and clean and precise, and then you sort of use those files to sort of create the world in the most pristine way possible. Whereas on one of our very first discussions, you mentioned that you want to record some things on location. It's like, let's get these car things in the car, let's get some things outside and sort of put them into that sort of real world. And then we kind of evolved even further from that, which was, why don't we try recording the whole thing binaurally and in those locations, which was, in some ways, it was great. I mean, besides having to let go of the nature of what you do in these jobs and having total control over everything, so when you do your edit and your mix, you can create everything from these beautiful source recordings. We let go of that. And in some ways, that handled a lot of the mixing for us because the way it was recorded, the perspectives and the sort of blocking that we kind of did led to the natural sort of panning and sound space was already created. The dynamics were kind of there as well because of the space between the microphones and the final headset and the performers. There was a linearity which was quite natural already.
I think what's really fun about listening to it, because the show is set in the world of radio, you've got a lot of the studio stuff that's on radio sounding like pristine in that kind of sense that you said before. And then we've recorded binaurally in offices and outside, and you have that dichotomy of what's on air, like what's public and what's private and what's kind of a part of a grander narrative, what's the subtext. It all automatically, like when you open up a door and you're out of that studio, the narrative changes, and it's kind of really, you kind of know where you are as a listener, and that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, 100%. And what was great about that as well is how we we try to delve into the authenticity of recording those sections on broadcast mics and obviously in those contained spaces. And then we have sometimes we'll be cutting between the two, as you said, with Michelle in the producer's booth and Campbell in the actual sort of recording space, and having that A being between that sort of broadcast mic right up in the face sort of perspective, and then cutting to this binaural world where we're hearing Campbell now, but through sort of actual ears, and then hearing that sort of space as well. And I think the most surprising thing was how well it all cut together as well, as on a seamless listening experience. And it really did, as you said, put sort of a polished world on. Here's this great radio station that you're on. Great. I feel terrible saying that now after the end of the show. But here's this radio broadcast as well that you're listening to. And then you're back into what I always refer to as a fly on the wall of these real world experiences. And it really cut together nicely.
Well, Matt, I think you did a really incredible job. It sounds absolutely fantastic. Well, for you, what was like the most exciting part of the record?
I think what I took away from that whole experience was by recording such a large amount of the scenes on island on location and treating it essentially as we would as a film shoot, where we block things out, we around locations, and we essentially framed it with a sort of set of ears. For me, and this is what I kept coming back to, was that the performances had a beautiful flow that would not have been achieved any other way. So beyond even the beauty of sort of hearing these spaces as we do with our own ears, the performances, I think, were heightened due to how it was recorded.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Matt.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you. It was a very fun, crazy, hectic crew over that sort of month, and thank goodness the baby held out till the end.
You did an incredible job, Matt. It was really phenomenal, just because it was hard to sort of imagine while we were doing it how it would all come together. But then just it's like a million small choices that you've made that just really lift the whole show. So thank you so much. It was thrilling to see what you did.
Absolute pleasure. It does have a great sonic identity, which is unlike anything else that you've kind of worked on. And I think, you know, you guys obviously have a huge part to play with your writing and performances, and it was an absolute pleasure and lots of fun to work on.
Oh, good on you, Matt. Thanks, Matt. We'll see you at the after party, which I'm sure Audible's going to pay for, which we haven't figured that out yet. But
I'll be there with a bottle of champagne and a chat.
It might be a bring a plate affair. We'll let you know.
I'll bring my best plate.
See ya.
Bye, Matt.
I thought one other person we should definitely put a phone call into is Anjali Rao. Anjali plays Campbell's producer, and she kind of goes through a bit of a roller coaster ride herself in this story. It's really kind of a two, maybe three person show. Liv Hewson, who plays Campbell's sister, is kind of like the antagonist of the whole show, but she lives in LA, so we can't really call her. And she's also a Hollywood star, so I wouldn't worry about calling her.
Yeah.
She's just got four feature films coming out this year.
Sorry, could you do a podcast about a podcast? I don't know. Drew Barrymore's waiting for me.
Yeah, but we should point out all these folks who involved. So Liv Hewson, obviously Hollywood star, did it for $42.02 an hour. Heather Mitchell.
Heather Mitchell.
Did a great role for free for us. Chris Taylor.
Let's not mention people's rates.
sure. Chris Taylor, Tony Martin's in the show. Bridie Connell is in the show.
So great.
Ash Williams has two lines in the show.
Incredible, Ash Williams. I mean, that was probably the biggest thrill for me was working with Ash Williams. But I mean, like, Tony Martin, you know, is just the king of radio, you know, and one of the great Australian, obviously, you know, originally from New Zealand, but one of the great comedic voices of this country. And that was that afternoon recording with him was an absolute career highlight. He was wonderful. I'm really excited for people to hear him as Dave Janacek, the outgoing, commentator that Campbell's sort of aspiring to be.
Very much like the incumbent king of radio for that radio station. Let's give Angelia a call, see if she's on the blower. So Angelia Rowe.
Well, hello there.
Hello, Angelia. You're on the podcast with Mark Humphreys and Evan and myself.
Hey, Angelia, how you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, so Riot Act launches tomorrow, and we thought we'd just give you a call and get your thoughts on it. Tell us, when you read the scripts, what did you think? What did you think when you saw what we had in store for Riot Act?
Wait, are you interviewing me right now?
Yeah, you're on air. Well, not on air. What? You're on podcast.
Oh, God. Like, tell me in advance, why don't you?
Oh, okay. So I'm gonna call you in about 1 second.
What did I think? Well, let me see now. It was like looking into a mirror of my exact life. That, you know, I got asked to read for the part of a brown chick, journalist, British accent, who came over here, and it all fell on its arse.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know, but then, you know, but if that hadn't happened, then who knows, I may never have got to read for the part of Michelle.
You know, it's something interesting about Australian media where, you know, when we cast this show, we just cast as many folks as we knew. But when it came to this part, it was actually very difficult to find someone because of the way Australian media, the colour of Australian media personalities look like. So your role was actually one of the few roles that we actually had to go to a casting agent to cast. And when you delivered your sample, it was like pitch perfect, and your backstory is absolutely incredible, being a CNN anchor who's had 20 million people watch her a night.
20 million?
200 million.
Oh, 220 million, sorry. 200.
How dare you? No. That's why my whole career fell on its ass, because of people like you that say that I had 20 million.
Well, not all of us have been tried to be picked up by Bill Clinton. So you had the most,
it was a dream of mine.
You had the most incredible career at CNN, and then to come to Australia to resettle back in Australia to kind of find the state of Australian media. For you, what are the similarities between Riot Act and Australian media?
They're one and the same. That's exactly how it works over here. You know, it took me years to sort of, I'm Australian. Mum's from Bendigo. You don't get more Australian than that. But it took me a long time to realise that diversity in Australian media means that you're a brunette. but yeah, it's really incredible, because the Australian media landscape just does not reflect the demographic of the country at all. And I found that quite intriguing and heartbreaking in equal measure.
How did you feel about, you know, you're a journalist, but how did you feel about playing a comic character, like in a narrative about this kind of story?
So this is the thing. So it actually turns out that although I've had, 20 plus years in, you know, the top tiers of television journalism, I had a sort of long wine-soaked lunch with my agent about a year ago, and I was like, Teresa, you know, television journalism was not my dream. She's like, what the hell are you talking about? I was like, nah, it was acting. My parents had always said, you know, over our dead bodies, you will be a journalist, and that's all there is to it. And then I sort of reached a happy medium with them as far as TV journalism was concerned, because there's actually quite a lot of acting that you have to do. yeah, there really is.
Mostly acting interested. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mostly acting interested, and sometimes failing spectacularly. So to me, it was, and of course, now my parents are absolutely like, oh, darling, act. but it was, so to me, sort of, because it had always been something that I wanted to try my hand at, it was an absolute dream. I loved every single second. And, you know, even hearing that I got the part was like, are you kidding me, Lois?
Well, I don't think there was anyone more qualified in Australia, Mark. What do you think?
Angela was wonderful. I mean, it was perfect. Because like we hadn't met before we started recording. And so in the dynamic, you know, it was sort of hoping that would work. And it was just thrilling to see how easily you slipped into that role.
Loved it. It was actually a real sort of honor to play her, because actually to sort of say things in the media when you are a journalist, as I have found out, that if you call Australia on the fact that, you know, it's a white blonde person's game, as you would know, Mark.
Yeah, I do. Hey, don't knock my business model.
But to say that out loud and in public, as I recently did at the law school, you just get completely and totally, hauled over the coals. It's like, oh, that's sour grapes, and blah, blah, blah. To actually sort of act the part of somebody who that happened to. And there are many of us. There are loads of us who are Australian, who are, you know, not Caucasian and not blonde and don't necessarily have Aussie accent, who kind of get popped in a different box and, you know, experience doesn't count very much at all. So I loved acting what I've actually experienced in real life.
That's great. Thanks, Angela. Thanks for at the last minute jumping on this behind the scenes podcast.
Unwilling participant.
I didn't know that I was on.
We're not journalists. We're podcasters. It's very, very different.
So, you guys, thanks for writing the poll and the show. It's an absolute ball terror.
Thanks, Angela. Lots of love.
See ya. Bye.
See ya. That's really great. I think today, which is the day the podcast comes out, is really exciting for me, because I feel like it's 2 years of work, and it's great to kind of finally put something you've crafted all this time out into the world. And creating something good with, you know, good people and good friends is always a privilege.
But Dan, can you tell us a bit about your character in this show? Because I think, as much as, you know, Campbell Parks is the main character, I am obsessed with this character. I don't know how much you can go into the backstory, but I know there's great backstory there.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with this character.
I don't know if you noticed in the Audible notes along with the press release when they said doing press, don't mention about the characters being representative of anybody in particular. So, yeah, I play a character called Nugget. Nugget is the station manager of 360, the radio station where Campbell works. And it's essentially, I've cherry-picked the best, most grotesque bits out of every executive producer I've ever had and general manager in media, and rolled them into one. So Nugget Phillips is kind of like loves his sport, loves the game, loves the idea of media, loves ratings, fucking hates anyone who gets in the way of him at a long lunch, and basically wants to see the whole game succeed. If you succeed, he succeeds, and if he succeeds, he gets to go and have a long lunch.
And what's his catchphrase?
Oh, ball terror. Now that's the only part that I've ever stolen from, I will mention his name because he won't mind, Brian Cockerell, who I used to work for at Australia's Funniest Home Videos, because we speak about it a lot together, because I think it's just one of the funniest things I've ever heard. And when I was working at Funniest Home Videos back in 2003, you'd done a good job, because it was a cottage system then. Our cottage was attached to the 60 Minutes cottage, and if you were working down, if you had a desk down at 60 Minutes and you heard, ha, 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 ball terror, from the other end of the cottage, you knew you'd done a good job. And so, well, Brian Cockerell's a comedian and a producer in his own right, and that's the only bit I've stolen from that character. But the rest for people who are familiar with Australian media may recognise the voice of other prominent media. It's kind of an impression of other prominent media operators. So that's my character.
No, it's our favourite. I think Bevan and I, it's our favourite part of the show. Yeah. So Nugget spin-off series, I think, is what we're looking at next.
That's right.
Yeah, Nugget origin story.
Campbell Parks, as Riot Act is a story of a bloke, Campbell Parks, who basically, through no fault of his own, ends up meeting his demise in a strange way when he works out the secrets to success of Australian broadcasting, which is being racist. And it's really thrilling to have worked with you, Mark, one of the best joke writers and performers in Australia, and Evan, one of the best joke writers in the world.
Mm, that's a fact. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So here we go. But enough about us. I'm really enjoying this backslapping podcast, but I think so. Yes, obviously, please go out and give it a crack. Sign up to Audible, and it's free to all Audible subscribers. Yeah, how this works?
Yeah. Give it 5 stars. Yeah. Mention you heard it on this podcast.
Tell them Dan sent you.
Thanks, folks. Thanks for listening, and please try it. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and if you didn't like it,
keep it to yourself.
Or go. Mark Fennell's got a very good show on Audible. It's all about chilies.
Actually, Mark Fennell is in our show, and I couldn't. Yeah. But I couldn't. When we were looking for someone to play the role of Mark Fennell, we looked high and low, and we finally settled on Mark Fennell. And I tell you what, Mark Fennell does a very good Mark Fennell.
Thanks a lot, everyone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.